This is an interview for the Youngstown State University Oral History Program dealing with the Youngstown community, the Youngstown Jewish community, and specifically the Rabbi Sidney Berkowitz. The interviewee is Mrs. Antonia Schildkraut. The interview is taking place at her residence at 2201 Goleta Avenue, Youngstown, Ohio. The interviewer is Matthew Butts. The date is July 3rd, 1992. The time is approximately 10:25. Okay. First, a couple questions here. Biographical information. Could you tell me a little bit about yourself, your childhood, your education?
I grew up in a part of Chicago called Jeffrey Manor. It was a community that was built after World War II, and most of the people who lived there were veterans of that war with families. There weren't too many older couples. So I grew up in a neighborhood, a very a planned neighborhood, where there was a planned community and sort of a central square, which is not what we think of in Youngstown, but the center of the community was the school, the elementary school. And surrounding the school were a variety of churches, it was including what eventually became a temple. So it was a very interesting sort of central area for the community, which was a variety of people with a variety of backgrounds and education. And what they had in common was that most of them served during the war and had young families. And I lived there throughout my whole childhood. And I had a very, what I consider a very happy childhood. I was an only child. Although I remember my friends saying, whenever they would talk about only children and them being spoiled, they'd say, "Oh, Tony, but you're the exception." He's the exception to the rule. But we had lots of friends and lots of fun socializing growing up in a very, some structured but mostly unstructured way. We as children provided our own structures by forming our own clubs and groups, and had a great deal to say how we were socialized. Our parents did some planning for us, but certainly not the kinds of things we do today for our children. We had activities to go to, and my parents were very cultured people, so it was important that I get an education in art, that I get an education in music, even if I didn't have any talent in either area, as a form of expression for myself. My parents were not wealthy, and not even middle class by income standards. But as a child, I was very protected from this. I realized I didn't go on as many vacations as my friends did. But most of our vacations were to family in California. And we did have many family gatherings, took turns at the different aunts and uncles' homes, you know, for family gatherings. But all in all, I had a very happily protected childhood, I'd say. It's an interesting community in which to grow up.
Tell me something about your education.
Well, I went to this elementary school where we all mixed together, although it was probably a higher percentage of Jewish, young Jewish people than would be in the general world. Why that happened, I don't know. But the high school we went to grew, of course, from a larger area. There were a lot of ethnic groups there. Very few Hispanics, very few blacks, but a lot of Polish people and Czechoslovakian people, that type of background. And so there was a pretty good mix. It was fun learning about other people and their cultures and so on. it was the days when they had special honors classes. So if you were a good student, mm-hmm. you were in these classes. And again, there was a higher proportion of Jewish students in these classes. So most of the time I was with my friends that I knew from elementary school.
Mm-hmm.
I was very active in especially the literary area of the school. In my senior year, I was editor of the yearbook,
mm-hmm.
and always had pretty good feelings about myself. After I graduated, I went to University of Illinois at Navy Pier for my pre-pharmacy year, and then attended the University of Illinois College of Pharmacy for 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
Graduated in 1966 with a Bachelor of Science in Pharmacy.
Mm-hmm. When did you first arrive in Youngstown?
Question. I think it was 1969,
uh-huh.
I believe that was the year. My husband, Stephen, who I had married in 1964, we've known each other since we were 10 years old, by the way, and
uh-huh.
so had a lot of these similar backgrounds. We grew up in the same neighborhood
mm-hmm.
for most of our lives. And we moved to Youngstown because he was offered a job at the chemistry department at Youngstown State University,
mm-hmm.
and I went with him. So that's when we came here.
What struck you about the city? What did Youngstown physically look like? A little bit about the city when you came here.
Well, when I first came, I had two feelings. One was, I think one response was, this is like Chicago.
Uh-huh.
So I had an immediate response to the physical setting of the steel mills and the pollution,
mm-hmm.
Which was negative. And the second response was sort of positive because I felt I'm used to a city like this. I can
uh-huh.
find my place. And then, of course, later on, that was reinforced with the ethnic variety of the community.
Mm-hmm.
And so I felt pretty much at home from the beginning.
Mm-hmm. What did the city physically look like in comparison today?
Well, certainly there was a lot more pollution.
Uh-huh.
And I remember when we first moved into this house, during the summertime, when the windows were open, I had to clean the grit off the windowsills every day.
Mm-hmm.
And people who I knew would tell me stories of their childhood, how their grandmothers would sweep the porches every day of
uh-huh.
their homes, especially if they lived near the steel mills, and how they really never knew the color of the porch.
Uh-huh.
It was they knew it was painted, but what color it was, they didn't know. It was the color of soot. There were some neighborhoods that were beautiful. Mill Creek Park was beautiful. There were some neighborhoods that were sort of tacky. In fact, when we moved into Austintown, because that was the only place, the Austintown rental units, it was the only place where we could find temporary housing before we decided we were going to stay in the community and buy a home.
Uh-huh.
I really wasn't struck with the community there at all. Everything seemed to be sort of thrown together without any central feeling of unity. And because I was used to this kind of city structure where you had a downtown and you had communities surrounding it and everybody really feeling a sense of togetherness, and that
mm-hmm.
downtown was pulling us all together, Austintown didn't have that feeling at all.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we decided to move and settle on the north side here, it was because we wanted to be part of the city.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly the downtown community was very thriving, although I didn't really partake of it initially. I had, when I moved to the community, I had a small child and I was pregnant, and I didn't really get too involved with the structure of the community until later years.
Mm-hmm. Were you a member of a synagogue in Chicago?
Yes. Yes, my family belonged to the Sinai Temple in
uh-huh.
Chicago. It was a Reform synagogue.
Uh-huh. Do you remember about what time it was or when it was that you joined Rodef Shalom?
It was when our youngest son became old enough for Jewish education,
mm-hmm.
so that had to be 1973, maybe.
Mm-hmm. Did you join it specifically because it was a Reform temple?
Yes.
Can you describe a little bit the difference between a Reform temple and maybe a little bit between a conservative and or Orthodox?
Okay. From our point of view, or the legal definitions, my husband is not a religious man.
Uh-huh.
He does not believe in ritual. He believes in the integrity of the history
mm-hmm.
of the people, of the Jewish people, and that we are a part of that continuous history. He did not have a religious education, although he did have a Jewish education. In a larger community, many times these kinds of groups are formed by residents who do not want to participate in
mm-hmm.
a temple per se, but just want to give their children a Jewish education from the historical standpoint. So he had grown up with that kind of background. I had a more religious background, although at that time Sinai Temple was probably the most Reform
mm-hmm.
temple in the country. Very, very little Hebrew, very, very little ritual, probably as close to a non-religious mm-hmm. temple as possible. And so when we came to this community, my husband and I had to do a lot of talking, even prior to having children. I mean, we'd been talking about this all our married life, what kind of religious education, if any, we were to give to our children. And finally, we both agreed when the time came that we did want to give our children a religious education. The type of organization that my husband had experienced was available in Cleveland.
Mm-hmm.
And we toyed for a time driving to Cleveland once a week
mm-hmm.
to take the children to that type of experience. But we decided that it was probably, and rightfully so, more important for them to remain in the community and to get a feeling of community. And because of the type of congregation Rodef Shalom was at that time, we joined without too much trepidation.
Mm-hmm.
My husband, although he did not feel comfortable initially
mm-hmm.
at the congregation, still would participate and have very many long, interesting discussions with the leadership at the temple
mm-hmm.
about what was important about being Jewish.
Uh-huh.
There was no question that we would participate in either a conservative or Orthodox environment, primarily because of my husband's and mine too lack of feeling the need for the ritual
mm-hmm.
in our lives.
Did Rabbi Berkowitz utilize any ritual within his services?
It was
less Reformed than the one you.
Yes, did. It definitely was, but not that much.
Uh-huh.
Not by much. Rabbi Berkowitz, the interesting story was when my feelings changed dramatically and sort of solidified the decision to go to participate in Rota when I found out that Rabbi Berkowitz was asked to be rabbi at Sinai Temple after Dr. Mann
hmm.
had died.
Oh,
so it was a connection.
Uh-huh.
It was a connection not only because both of them were rabbis, but because both of them were the same kind of rabbi.
Uh-huh.
And it just, that piece of knowledge made me very comfortable
uh-huh.
and sort of solidified my decision.
Uh-huh. Okay. Do you remember the first time you met Rabbi Berkowitz?
No, I don't. I really don't. I think that the only time that I ever really had a detailed conversation with him, in the sense of meeting, other than just shaking hands and having chit-chat,
mm-hmm.
was when he came to our home after we had come home from Chicago after my father had died in 1975.
Mm-hmm.
He and Pauline, his wife, came to call on us when we arrived home.
Mm-hmm.
It was a most interesting and enlightening conversation we had because, of course, Dr. Berkowitz had not met my father,
uh-huh.
but had known that he was from Germany and had come to this country in 1933, prior to our involvement in the war, prior to war. And my father had begun to be harassed by the Nazi soldiers.
Uh-huh.
He was a young man at the time. And and his family was smart enough to send him over
uh-huh.
early. My father had chosen to be cremated
uh-huh.
after he died and not buried, which is certainly not part of the Jewish tradition. And the rabbi was very, very interested in why someone whose distant family members had been decimated at the concentration camps, whose sister had been jailed
uh-huh.
but had not been in a concentration camp, but from that kind of background, why he would have chosen to be cremated and not buried,
mm-hmm.
but to have his ashes scattered over Lake Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
He couldn't understand it. He was trying to talk it out, to try to understand my father's reasoning and thinking. I couldn't help him much. I said that my father had always said that cemeteries were a waste. It was a waste of beautiful grounds, that those grounds should be playgrounds for children, for the living.
Uh-huh.
They should not be a place where someone goes and when everyone who knows that person is dead, then no one will visit. You know, he just had very strong feelings about that, and I think he had very strong feelings about religion too.
Mm-hmm.
His father was had helped build a very large congregation in Essen, Germany, and had been president of the temple and very active in the temple. And my father really had wanted nothing to do with organized religion.
Uh-huh.
He somehow felt that the Jewish community and organized religion must have failed the Jewish people
mm-hmm.
somehow by not either providing leadership or something. I mean, he never would really talk about it. I, too, sometimes have to think about why he thought the things he did. But I just remember Dr. Berkowitz trying to resolve that issue in his own mind about why my father did what he did.
Uh-huh.
And it was an insight into a person's personality. Because someone like Dr. Berkowitz, who has done so much studying and was an intellectual,
uh-huh.
and who's sometimes autocratic
uh-huh.
decisions, because he had made his place in the world
uh-huh.
and people admired him, he still took the time to try to understand one individual man who we didn't know,
mm-hmm.
tried to understand his decision. And I found that very moving
uh-huh.
and very interesting about him, about Dr. Berkowitz.
Uh-huh. Speaking of Dr. Berkowitz, Do you remember anything about how he ran services at the temple?
Oh, yes. His sermons were wonderful.
Uh-huh.
They weren't always... You didn't always agree with what he had to say.
Uh-huh.
But he spoke with wisdom and intellect on a variety of subjects. He was very much at ease with so much knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
And my husband always enjoyed going to services when we did attend, because even though he disagreed with the rabbi, maybe on some of the things he said, it was intellectually stimulating, and that was something that appealed to us. Sometimes he and Cantor Ehrlich would get into little tiffs that were visible, on the bema, and you know that maybe they weren't following what they had decided to do prior to the services, and so they would get together and have these little talks, and you know, sometimes one of them would win, and sometimes the other would win, but it was always a kind of display of confidence and of wanting to be where he was.
Uh-huh.
You know, it was a very strong sense of self. And all of this sort of came together for me when I found out more about him and the other things he had done in the community.
Mm-hmm. What were some of these things that he had done within the community?
Well, what was so interesting was when I was appointed by Mayor Ungaro to the Human Relations Commission in the city of Youngstown, one of the few other Jewish people who had ever been on that commission was the rabbi.
Uh-huh.
And some of the people who I was serving with had served with him and spoke very highly of him, that he sort of led the way sometimes and made things seem clearer to other people, that he would always sort of get down to the basic question, find the basic question underlying a particular conflict that we were asked to resolve. It was, again, a further insight into his personality that he would take the time out of what must have been a very busy, hectic schedule to participate in this government unit of that wasn't always well-funded, that was certainly many times center of controversy, but that he participated in this particular organization. And it made me feel good personally to also be part of that Jewish continuum and to sort of, I won't say follow in his footsteps, but also be a Jewish person who was interested in the conditions of humanity within the city.
Mm-hmm. What were some of the important things that, while you were on this commission, that you faced?
Well, first of all, the lack of money to support a commission, which I personally felt was very important to have. I mean, certainly we have federal and state commissions that deal with problems of inequities in housing, the job market, or wherever it could be found. But we felt, and I felt very strongly too, that there had to be some place locally that people who had conflicts could come to their peers to talk about their problems and perhaps get them resolved. But it takes funding. You need an investigator, you need a lawyer. I was involved for a long period of time with an age discrimination case. I'm sure we saw different kinds of things than Rabbi Berkowitz saw. I'm sure he saw many more race discriminations than we did. We were beginning to see age and sex discriminations, and I was a member of the commission at the time which wrote the Human Relations Ordinance, which is a beautiful work of legislative art, all right, I'll say that, but when not adequately funded, it's useless. And so we were involved to make sure at that time that, for instance, sexual preference was a part of this ordinance, because of course that was when I was a member, was the time when all of the AIDS thing and homosexuality and everything was in the newspapers every day. So we felt it was important to write a strong ordinance, which we did. The ordinance that Rabbi Berkowitz was under was a rather weak one.
Mm-hmm.
And but again, if you have a strong ordinance, that's wonderful, but if you don't have the funding for it, then it's useless.
Mm-hmm.
You can listen to people, but when you don't have adequate investigation, then it becomes a very frustrating, useless kind of participation, which mm-hmm. I found it eventually to be, and therefore resigned, because mm-hmm. I felt my energies could be used elsewhere to mm-hmm. better advantage. Myself in the city.
What are some other activities you're involved with in the city?
Well, I'm still a member of the Youngstown Charter Revision Commission. We mm-hmm. haven't done much lately, but I was involved with the two elections in the 80s when charter revision was on the ballot,
mm-hmm.
and a lot of charter changes were made, including giving the mayor a 4-year term and so on, those mm-hmm. kinds of changes. And that was a very exciting kind of commission to be on, because one had to do almost everything.
Mm-hmm.
You had city resources to help you. Obviously, the law department from the city had to help you legalize your ideas.
Mm-hmm.
And we had to interview many, many people in the community, many leaders in the community, in order to get their input, and organizations, in order to get their input into what changes they felt were important for the city. And it was time to do some changes, time to make people realize that, you know, the Constitution of the United States and the Ohio Revised Code aren't the only structures that we're working under, that we have this structure that helps govern us, that we, you know, is not written in stone, but is supposed to be a live document and something to change with time. And Clingan Jackson was on our commission, which was wonderful, because mm-hmm. he would always tell us wonderful stories and give us much background information. And I'm friendly with Ibis Boyer through the League of Women Voters, mm-hmm. Who, as a member of the political science department at Youngstown State University, was a member of one of the previous Charter Revision Commissions. Mm-hmm. So we had a lot of knowledge to draw from, and that was a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
So those were the two groups that I've been primarily active with in the governmental level
mm-hmm.
in the city. There at one time, back in the middle 70s, I believe, the Youngstown Health Department had a citizen board,
mm-hmm.
and I was on that board. But that was dissolved because we were making too many waves. We got in the paper too much. The Vindicator was reporting on what we were saying too much. And the Board of Health itself and the mayor just dissolved the group.
Mm-hmm. Through my research, I found that Rabbi Berkowitz was involved with, I think, around 38 different boards he resided.
Oh, wow.
He's
a busy man.
Yeah. Are there any other things that you're familiar with him being activist in within the community?
Well, I know that he was he was very active. He probably was active in every board that he could possibly be on.
Uh-huh.
But the one that is now called the Human Relations Commission, I don't remember what it was called at that time, was the one I was most familiar with,
mm-hmm.
his participation in.
Okay. What do you think Dr. Berkowitz's impact was on the Youngstown Jewish community?
Oh, well, I think he certainly was, by being a leader not only in the Jewish community, but going outside the Jewish community
mm-hmm.
and being interested in everything around him. He became even a stronger leader within the Jewish community. I think he was the rabbi in this community. He was certainly thought most highly of by non-Jewish people. Maybe, as you can tell, most of my activities have not been within the Jewish community, but have been outside the Jewish community. And so I've been in contact with people who have known him in his capacity other than being a Jewish leader. And I think that has helped the community in general. I see a tendency towards the other direction, unfortunately, over the last few years, of the leaders in the Jewish community tending to stay within the community, and the members of the Jewish community spending much of their volunteer efforts within the community and not getting outside. And I think that's a mistake. And I think, therefore, I feel more strongly than ever that it's important for Jewish people to partake in other areas other than just Jewish things. And so I feel, again, a strong impact that he has had has been, was one of showing by example that Jews must be involved in their surroundings. I mean, when someone tells you that you're the only Jewish person they've ever known, then you know that there is a lack of this mixing and so on. And I think he exemplified the kind of life that a Jewish person should have. But of course, he had maybe more energies than most people do, too. He did so very much.
Would you characterize him then as a one of the Youngstown's foremost urban leaders?
I think he was an urban leader, yes. And I think people perceived him not only as a Jewish leader, but someone who was interested in the community as a whole. And I have to say that I think the two rabbis that followed him, Rabbi Powers and Rabbi Brown, both are trying to reinstill this into the into their own Jewish communities by also participating, not to as great an extent as he ever did, but somewhat.
Question I have been asking everybody, are there any personality traits that you could attribute to Rabbi Berkowitz?
Well, I think he was a probing person. And again, it wasn't a selfish kind or a intruding kind of probing. It was trying to understand humanity kind of probing. I think he was caring. Sometimes I think he might have been perceived as caring in a non-tactful way. But it was still a truly caring personality. I remember after my father died and when my mother first came to visit, and we went to temple, he was extremely solicitous of her. Not gushy-mushy kind of stuff, you know, but deeply caring. Zelda, how are you getting along kind of caring, you know? I mean, here is a woman he had never met. But he still, and it wasn't just being a rabbi. It wasn't just doing what he was expected to do. Because I think people can tell when it's false or when it's just rote.
Uh-huh.
It was a truly very caring kind of feeling. And my mother, who had never really been a religious person, was very moved and touched by him.
Uh-huh.
And his, it was almost an intensity of caring.
Uh-huh.
And she always felt very, very good about that. And I did too. Also, I just want to add about his intellectual aspirations.
Uh-huh.
And his intellectual approach to Judaism was something that I liked. Maybe
mm-hmm.
because I was used to it from my childhood, but I liked that.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that he lived in the city and didn't leave mm-hmm. the community when everybody else was leaving the community.
Do you live on the north side,
mm-hmm.
someplace around?
Yeah, just a couple blocks away.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Is there anything we haven't touched on that you think we need to add? Or?
Well, of course, much of our communication with the temple was through the education program for
mm-hmm.
our children. But Dr. Berkowitz was still very aware of my husband's feelings.
Uh-huh.
When Douglas said, our oldest son, said he wanted to be bar mitzvah,
uh-huh.
my husband didn't know how we could do that.
Uh-huh.
Because it would mean a ceremony, it would mean my husband participating,
uh-huh.
and he wasn't sure that he could do that. So we spoke with Cantor Ehrlich, who was, by virtue of being Cantor, head of the religious school and also the person who did the training
mm-hmm.
for the bar mitzvah. And we discussed this at length. And they came to some sort of agreement as how the traditional liturgy could be worded.
Mm-hmm.
To make it comfortable for my husband, to enable Douglas to be bar mitzvah, and to enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure he communicated with Rabbi Berkowitz, even though we did not directly, because
uh-huh.
that was not the way the system was set up. And so the bar mitzvah was very nice. We had it in the chapel. We were one of the few families that opted to do that, because since we had no family in town and we had a small family who were coming in from out of town, and I'm not the kind of person to invite everyone I know to a bar mitzvah or to a wedding just because they're a business associate or
uh-huh.
something. I mean, I felt it had to be people who were invited had to know Douglas.
Uh-huh.
So we had a small group, and then afterwards we had a reception with a lunch in our home, and Rabbi Berkowitz was very excited.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, for some reason, he liked our house, okay?
Uh-huh.
And second of all, one of my friends had made a challah herself
mm-hmm.
to have at the reception, and he was so excited. I haven't tasted homemade challah in so many years, I can't tell you, he said. He was so excited. So I think he had a good time. And that was a good memory. That was fun because
uh-huh.
he really could enjoy himself.
Uh-huh.
He could get enthusiastic, and maybe as a mother of two pre-teenage boys, I wasn't able to get enthusiastic about much. I was tired most of the
uh-huh.
time. So to find someone like him who was enthusiastic about something like that was really, again, gave me another insight into what I always thought that the kind of person he was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a really good story. I like that. Is there anything else that you'd like to add or think we haven't touched on?
I don't know. I mean, when you had called and said that you were going to talk to us about the rabbi, I tried to sort of collect my thoughts and my stories. And I think those are really the highlights of my feelings. I felt that, and he did handpick Rabbi Powers to lead the congregation after he died. And I personally liked Rabbi Powers very much and was on the committee to try to save his position at the temple. Can't win every battle. You can't even always win the war sometimes. But Rabbi Powers was very much like Rabbi Berkowitz. And I think he wanted to step in his shoes without laying the groundwork first. Rabbi Berkowitz earned where he was through a lot of time and effort. Rabbi Powers didn't start at the bottom. He wanted to start at the top. And so he took on many of the positions of Rabbi Berkowitz. And I think everyone looked upon him as sort of an upstart. And they didn't always approve of the things he had to say. They would take it from Rabbi Berkowitz, maybe the same thing, but they wouldn't take it from him, which was sort of an interesting thing. But Rabbi Berkowitz was an intellectual. His sermons were stimulating. Again, you didn't always agree, but they were stimulating. There was a tendency to include more ritual and more Hebrew into services, which I think has been happening throughout this country. I don't think it is only our temple, which makes us feel as a family a little bit less comfortable. But certainly, the experience and the education that they had at Rodef, which I think basically was set up sure under Cantor Ehrlich and Rabbi Berkowitz's feelings of what was necessary for their education, has made both my children comfortable in any synagogue they've attended. And my younger son particularly, who has always been very interested in Jewish history, to the point where he did a National History Day project on the Jew, the Nazi, and the survivor, the rabbi, the Nazi, and the survivor, where he based his rabbi on Rabbi Powers and his survivor on a friend of the family who he interviewed. He took that program all the way to National History Day and won first place in National History Day, and then performed it in our community too, at various and sundry places, including the temple. But I think although Rabbi Powers was the person at the time who he related to, the whole background, the whole philosophy was Rabbi Berkowitz. I think Rabbi Powers was picked by Rabbi Berkowitz because of that, because of that similarity. So, I give that kind of insight, and Douglas, our older son, through the temple, was given an opportunity, as Jordan was, to participate in contests, and they had awards and so on. And I don't, you know, as parents, it's wonderful to take credit for what children do, right? But you can't always do that. It's a philosophy, and it doesn't only come from the family. It comes from the surroundings that they live in and that they see on a day-to-day basis, going to the public schools, you know, integrated public schools in Youngstown, where they were actually a minority, and so small a minority that they posed no threat to anyone, and so were able not to feel threatened and not to have any prejudice against them throughout their schooling, because of this philosophy. And I think that Rabbi Powers and Rabbi Berkowitz, even though they were religious figures, encompass much of the same kind of philosophy about life that my husband and I do.
Mm-hmm.
And because of that, I think that they influenced our children in ways we'll never know. And that has been very important to us. Probably more important to us than ever memorizing dates.
Mm-hmm.
Just turning out to be the kind of people they were.
Mm-hmm.
And the adults in their lives, by necessity, they didn't have too many of them.
Mm-hmm.
Because we didn't have the family living in Youngstown. So the adults that they did come across in their lives, Rabbi Powers, Rabbi Berkowitz, Cantor Ehrlich, and their teachers at school, were the ones that they had to learn from.
Mm-hmm.
And I if you want to get philosophical about it, I think that they had an impact.
Mm-hmm.
What it can be exactly, I don't know. I don't know if I'll ever know. I just know that I'm proud of my children for the kinds of people they are.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care what kinds of jobs they have or how much money they have. I care about the way they think,
mm-hmm.
and what they think about human beings and how they treat people.
Uh-huh.
And it's been proven to me, even in their young adult years, that they're both very sensitive to their surroundings in that respect, and that's been a source of great gratification to me. And I think Rabbi Berkowitz could be perceived as being a role model,
uh-huh.
in that respect.
So. Okay, well, thank you very much for your time.
Well, this has been fun.
Yeah, I really, these are two great interviews.
It's been fun.